Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 2, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 39, given in Bombay, India.
These techniques are concerned with emptiness. These are the most delicate, most subtle. Because even to conceive emptiness seems impossible. Buddha has used all these four techniques for his disciples and bhikkhus. Because of these four techniques, he was misunderstood totally. Buddhism got completely uprooted from Indian soil just because of these four techniques. Because Buddha said there is no God. Because if there is God, you cannot be totally empty. You may not be there, but the God will be there. The divine will be there. And your mind can deceive you. Because your divine may be just your mind playing tricks. Buddha said there is no soul. Because if there is any soul, Atma, then you can hide your ego behind it. Your ego will be difficult to leave you. If you feel that there is some self within you, and then you cannot be totally empty, because you will be there. Just to prepare ground for these techniques of emptiness, Buddha denied everything. He was not an atheist, but he appears to be an atheist because he says there is no God. He says there is no soul. He says there is nothing substantial in existence. Existence is empty. Just to prepare ground for these techniques. And once you enter emptiness, you would have entered all. The divine you may call it, God you may call it, or Atma, soul, whatsoever you like. But you can enter the truth only when you are totally empty. Nothing should be left of you. Hindus thought that Buddha is just destroying religion because he is teaching irreligion. And people who heard him, even they couldn't follow. Because whenever you go somewhere, you go to seek something. You never go to seek emptiness. So those who heard him, they were seeking something, nirvana, moksha, the other world, heaven, truth, but something they were seeking. They had come to gratify their ultimate desire, to find the truth. That is the last desire. And unless you are completely desireless, you cannot know the truth. The very condition of knowing is to be totally desireless. So one thing is certain, you cannot desire truth. If you desire, the very desire will become the barriers. Masters have been there before Buddha who were teaching, don't desire, be desireless. But they were talking about God, about the kingdom of God, heaven, paradise, moksha, the ultimate freedom and liberation. And they were talking that be desireless. Buddha felt that you cannot be desireless if there is something to be attained. You may pretend that you are desireless, but this pretense of desirelessness is also for some desire to be fulfilled. It is false. Because masters say that you cannot attain to ultimate bliss with desire, and you want to attain ultimate bliss, so you start being desireless. You try to be desireless so that you can attain the ultimate bliss. But the desire is there. You are trying to be desireless just because of a desire. So Buddha says there is no God to be attained. Even if you desire, there is no one to be attained. Be desireless. There is no moksha somewhere. There is no goal. Life is meaningless and goalless. His emphasis is just beautiful and wonderful. No one has tried that way. He destroys all the goals just to help you to be desireless. If the goals are there, how you can be desireless? And if you are not desireless, you will not attain to the goals. This is the paradox. He destroyed all the goals. Not that those goals are not there. They are there. And they can be attained. But if you want to attain them, if you desire to attain them, it is impossible. The very basic condition is you must be desireless. Then the ultimate happens to you. So Buddha says there is nothing to be desired. Your desires are futile. You drop all desires. When there is no desire, you will be empty. Just imagine, if there is no desire within you, what you will be? You are nothing but a bundle of desires. All desires gone, simply you disappear. Not that you will not exist, you will exist as an emptiness. You will be there just like a vacant room. No one is there. A sunya. A nothingness. Buddha has called this nothingness anatma, anatta, no soulness. You will not feel any sense of that I am. Just emptiness, no I to it. Because I is nothing but accumulated desires. Condensed desires, crystallized desires, many, many desires have become your eyes. Just as physicists say that if you analyze matter, then matter is nothing but atoms. There is nothing to join those atoms. Each atom is surrounded by a vacant space. You have one rock in your hand. There is no rock. just atoms of energy, and between two atoms, infinite space. Even a rock is spacious, porous. They say that soon we will be able to pull that space out from anything. H.G. Wells has written one story in 21st century. One passenger starts calling for coolies on a big station. Other passengers who are traveling in the same compartment with this passenger, they cannot understand because he had no luggage. Just a packet of cigarettes and a small matchbox. That's all his luggage. And he goes on calling coolies. A big group has gathered. Some passenger asks, why you are calling? You don't have anything. You can carry this matchbox and this pocket of cigarettes yourself. What are you going to do with this 24 coolies? That passenger laughs and he says, try. You try that matchbox. That matchbox is not ordinary. One railway engine is condensed into it. It is possible soon. The space has been pulled out. And then it can be again, the space can be forced in and the engine will take its shape again. Big things can be carried without much problem. The weight will remain the same. Their shape, their form will become smaller and smaller. A matchbox can contain a railway engine. But the weight will remain the same because space has no weight. You can pull out the space, you have not pulled the weight. The weight will remain the same because weight is contained by the atoms, not by the space. They say the whole earth can be condensed into the form, the shape of one apple. But the weight will remain the same. And if you pull apart all these atoms, if you take one atom out and then another and then another, and you take all the atoms out, nothing is left behind. So matter is just an appearance. Buddha has analyzed human mind in the similar way. He is one of the greatest scientists possible. He says your ego is nothing but just desires, atomic desires. Millions of desires are there, they make you. You go on pulling one desire by one, a moment will come when there is no desire, you have disappeared. Just space. Just vacant space remains. And this, Buddha says, is nirvana. This cessation of your being completely. You no more. And Buddha says, this is silence. Unless you are completely gone, silence cannot descend in you. Buddha says, you cannot be silent because you are the problem. You cannot be peaceful because you are the disease. And you can never be blissful because you are the only barrier for the bliss. Can come any moment, but you are the barrier. When you are not, bliss will be there. When you are not, peace will be there. When you are not, silence will be there. When you are not, ecstasy will be there. When your inner being is totally empty, this emptiness itself is bliss. That's why Buddha's teachings are called Sunyavad, the philosophy of emptiness, or the philosophy of zero. These four techniques are to attain this state of being, or you can call it a state of no being. There is no difference. You can give it a positive term, as Hindus and Jains have called it soul. You can give it a more appropriate but negative term, as Buddha have called it anatma, no selfness or no soulness. It depends on you. But whatsoever you call, there is no one to be named and called. Just infinite space. That's why I say these are the ultimate techniques, the most delicate, the most difficult, but the most wonderful. And if you can work with any of these four techniques, you will gain the unattainable. The first technique, suppose your positive form to be an empty room with walls of skin empty. Suppose your positive form to be an empty room with walls of skin, but inside everything empty. This is one of the most beautiful techniques. Just sit in a meditative posture, relaxed. Alone, your backbone is straight and the whole body is relaxed, as if the whole body is hanging on the backbone. Then close your eyes. For a few moments, simply go on feeling relaxed, more relaxed, becoming calm and calmer and calmer. For a few moments, just to be in tune. And then suddenly start feeling your body is just walls of skin. And inside nothing. There is no one inside, the house is vacant. You will feel sometimes thoughts passing, clouds of thoughts moving. But don't think that they belong to you. You are not. Just think they are roaming in a vacant sky. They don't belong to anyone. They don't have any roots. And really this is the case. Just as clouds move in the sky, they don't have any roots and they don't belong to the sky. They simply roam in the sky. They come and they go. And the sky remains untouched, uninfluenced. Feel your body is just walls of skin. And there is no one inside. If still thoughts will continue just because of old habit, momentum. Old cooperation with thoughts, they will go on coming. Just think they are rootless clouds moving within the space. They don't belong to you, they don't belong to anybody else. There is no one to whom they can belong, you are empty. It will be difficult because of old habit, nothing else. Your mind would like to catch some thought, be identified with it, move with it, enjoy it, indulge in it, resist. Just say there is no one to indulge. There is no one to fight. There is no one to do anything with this thought. Within few days, few weeks, thoughts will slow down. They will come less and less. The clouds will start disappearing. Or even if they come, there will be big gaps of cloudless sky when there will be no thought. One thought will pass, then another will not come for a period. Then another will come, and then there will again be an interval. In those intervals, you will know for the first time what emptiness is. And the very glimpse of it will fill you with such deep bliss you cannot imagine. Really, it is difficult to say anything about it, because whatsoever is said in language will refer to you, and you will not be there. If I say you will be filled with happiness, this is nonsense. You will not be there, so how I can say you will be filled with happiness? Happiness will be there. Just within the four walls of your skin, happiness will be there vibrating, and you will not be there. A deep silence will descend on you, because if you are not, no one can create disturbance. You always go on thinking that somebody else is disturbing you. The traffic noise on the road, children playing around you, the wife working in the kitchen. Somebody is disturbing you. Nobody is disturbing you. You are the cause of disturbance, because you are there. Anything can disturb you. If you are not there, then disturbances will come and pass through the emptiness without touching it. You are there, very touchy. A wound, anything, immediately hurts you. I have heard about one scientific story. Once it happened, after the Third World War, man has died. Now there is no one on the earth. Trees are there, hills are there. And one big tree thought to create great noise, as it used to create in the past. It fell down from a big rock. It did everything that was possible, but there was no noise. Because for noise, your ears are needed. For sound, your ears are needed. If you are not there, sound cannot be created. It is impossible. I am speaking here. I am making sound because you are. If no one is here, I may go on speaking. Sound cannot be created. But I can create, because I myself will hear it. If no one is there to hear, sound cannot be created, because sound is a reaction of your ears. If no one is there on the earth, the sun will rise, but the sun cannot create light. It seems absurd. We cannot conceive it, because we always think that sun will rise and there will be light. No, your eyes are needed. Without your eyes, the sun cannot create light. It may go on rising, it will be futile. The rays will pass in emptiness. There will be no one who can react and can say this is light. Light is a phenomena of your eyes. You react. Sound is a phenomena of your ears. You react. What do you think? The rose is there in the garden. If no one passes, there is no perfume in it. Rose alone cannot create perfume. Impossible. Your nose is needed. Someone to react and interpret that this is perfume. This is rose perfume. Howsoever hard a rose tries, without a nose, it will not be a rose at all. The disturbance on the estate is not there really. It is within your ego. Your ego reacts and says this is disturbance. It is your interpretation. Sometimes in a different mood you may enjoy it, and then it will not be a disturbance. You may enjoy it in a different mood, and then you will say this is beautiful. What music. But in a sad moment, even music will become disturbance. But if you are not there, just a space, emptiness, there can neither be disturbance nor music. Things will just pass through you, unnoticed, because unstruck, there is no wound to react. There is no one to respond. Not even an echo will be created. This is what Buddha calls nirvana. And this technique can help you. Suppose your positive form, your passive form, to be an empty room with walls of skin, empty. Sit in a passive state, inactive, not doing anything. Because whenever you do something, the doer comes in. Really, there is no doer. Only because of doing, you imagine. Buddha is difficult only because of this. He says a man is walking only because of linguistic forms. Problems have arisen. We say a man is walking. If you analyze this sentence, it means there is someone who is walking. And Buddha says there is only process of walking. There is no one who is walking. You are laughing. Because of language, it appears that there is someone who is laughing. Buddha says there is laughter. No one inside who is laughing. When you laugh, remember this and find out one who laughs. You will never find. There is simply laughter. There is no one behind it, doing it. When you are sad, there is no one sad, simply sadness. Look at this. Simply sadness. It is a process. Simply laughter. Simply happiness. Unhappiness. But there is no one behind it, only because of language. We go on thinking in terms of two. If there is movement, we say there must be someone who has moved, the mover. We cannot conceive movement alone. But have you seen ever the mover? Have you ever seen the one who laughs? Buddha says there is life, the process of life, no one inside who is alive. And then there is death. No one dying. For Buddha, you are not a duality. This creates a duality. I am speaking. It seems that I am someone who is speaking. Buddha says there is speaking. There is no one who is making the speech. It is a process, it belongs to no one. But for us it is difficult because our mind is deeply rooted into dualism. Whenever we think some activity, we conceive some actor inside, some doer. That's why passive, inactive form is good in meditation, because then you can fall into emptiness more easily. Buddha says, don't meditate, be in meditation. And the difference is vast. I will repeat, Buddha says, don't meditate, be in meditation. Because if you meditate, the doer has come. You will go on thinking you are meditating. The meditation has become an act. Buddha says, be in meditation. And that means be totally passive, don't do anything, and don't think that there is any doer. That's why sometimes, when the doer is lost in the doing, you feel a sudden upsurge of happiness. That comes because you have become one. A dancer. A moment comes when dance takes over and the dancer disappears. A sudden blessing, a sudden beatitude, a sudden ecstasy. He is filled with unknown bliss. What has happened? Only the doing remained and the doer was no more. On the war front, sometimes soldiers attain to very deep bliss. It is difficult to conceive because they are so near death. Any moment they can die. In the beginning, it makes them afraid. They tremble and fear. But you cannot continue trembling and fearing every day, continuously. One becomes accustomed. One accepts death. Then the fear disappears. And when death is so near, and any wrong movement, and you may be dead immediately, the doer is forgotten and only duty remains, only doing remains. And one has to be so much deeply in the doing that one cannot go on remembering that I am. That I am will create trouble. You will miss. You will not be totally in the activity. And life is at stake. You cannot afford duality. Action becomes total. When action is total, you suddenly feel you are happy as you have never been before. Warriors have known very deep springs of joy that ordinary life cannot give to you. That may be the reason why war is so appealing. That may be the reason why Kshatriyas, warriors, have attained to moksha more than Brahmins. Because Brahmins were always thinking and thinking, mental activity. 24 Tirthankaras of Jains, Ram, Krishna, Buddha, they are all Kshatriyas, warriors. They have attained to the highest peak. No businessman is ever heard to attain that. He lives in such security where he can afford to be dual. Whatsoever he is doing, it is never total. Profit cannot be a total activity. You can enjoy it, but it is never a life and death problem. You can play with it, but nothing is at stake. It is a game. Businessman is in a game, the game of money. The game is not very dangerous. So businessmen always, almost, remain mediocre. Even a gambler may attain to higher peaks of bliss than a businessman, because the gambler moves into danger. He stakes everything that he has got. In that moment of total mistake, the doer is lost. That may be the cause why gambling is so appealing. War is so appealing. As far as I understand, whatsoever is appealing, there must be somewhere lurking ecstasy behind it. Somewhere, some hint of the unknown. Somewhere, some glimpse of the deep mystery of life must be hidden there. Otherwise, nothing can be appealing. This passivity, any posture that you take in meditation should be passive. Buddha sitting. In India, we have evolved the most passive asana, the most passive posture, that is Siddhasana. And the beauty of it is that in a Siddhasana posture, just like as Buddha is sitting, the body is in the deepest passive state. Even while lying, you are not so passive. Even while sleeping, your posture is not so passive. It is active. Why a Siddhasana is so passive? For so many reasons. The body is locked, closed. And body has an electric circle. When the circle is closed and locked, the electric moves round and round inside the body. It is not leaking out. No, it is a proved scientific phenomenon that in certain postures your body is leaking energy. When the body is leaking energy, the body has to create energy continuously. It is active. The body dynamo has to work continuously because you are leaking. When energy is leaking outside body, the inside body has to be active to replace it. So the most passive state will be when no energy is leaking. Now in the Western countries, particularly in England, they treat patients just by making a circle of their body electricity. In many hospitals now those techniques are being used and very helpful. A person lies on the floor on a net of wires. Those net of wires are just to make a circle of his body electricity. just half an hour is enough, and he will feel so relaxed, so filled with energy, so strong, that he cannot believe that when he had come he was so weak. In all old cultures, people used to sleep in a particular direction in the night, just so that energy doesn't leak out, because the earth has a magnetic force. If you use that magnetic force, then you have to lie in a particular direction. Then that magnetic force in the earth will magnetize you the whole night. If you are lying opposite to it, then that magnetic force is fighting with you. Your energy will be discharged. So many people in the morning feel very much depressed, very much weakened. This should not be so, because the sleep is meant to rejuvenate you, to give you more energy. But there are many people who are more energetic when they go to bed, and in the morning they are just dead. In many reasons, this may be one, they are lying in a wrong direction. They may be lying against the earth magnet. Then they will feel dissipated. So now scientists say that body has an electric circuit. It can be locked. And they have studied many yogis sitting in Siddhasana. In that state, body is leaking minimum. Energy is preserved. When energy is preserved, the inner batteries need not work. There is no need for any inner activity. The body is passive. In this passivity, you can become empty more easily than when if you are active. This Siddhasana posture, your backbone is straight and the whole body is also straight. Now many studies have been done. When your body is straight, totally straight, you are least influenced by gravitation of the earth. That's why if you sit in a posture which is inconvenient, which you call inconvenient, the inconvenience is caused because your body is affected by more gravitation. If you sit leaning to one side, your more body is pulled by the gravitation. If you are sitting straight, then the gravitation is least effective, because it can pull only your backbone, nothing else. That's why it is difficult to sleep while standing. It is almost impossible to sleep while standing in a sirsasana on your head. For sleep, you have to lie down on the ground. Why? Because then the earth has the maximum pull on you. And maximum pull makes you unconscious. Minimum pull makes you aware. Maximum pull makes you unconscious. For sleep, you have to lie down on the ground. So the earth gravitation touches whole of your body and pulls every cell of it. You become unconscious. Animals are more unconscious because they cannot stand erect. And evolutionists say that man could evolve because he could stand erect on 2 feet. Because of that, he could become a little more aware. The gravitation pull is less. In Siddhasana, it is at its minimum. The body is inactive and passive, closed inside. It has become a world unto itself. Nothing is moving out, nothing is coming in. Eyes are closed, hands are locked, feet are locked, energy moves in a circus. And whenever energy moves in a circle, it creates the inner rhythm, an inner music. And the more you hear that music, the more you feel relaxed. Suppose your passive form to be empty, just like an empty room with walls of skin, empty. And go on dropping into that emptiness. A moment will come sometime when you will feel everything has disappeared. There is no one, nobody. The house is vacant. The lord of the house has disappeared, evaporated. In that gap, in that interval, when you are not present inside, the divine will be present. When you are not, God is. When you are not, bliss is. So try to disappear. Try to disappear from within. Second technique, gracious one, play. The universe is an empty self wherein your mind frolics infinitely. Gracious one, play. The universe is an empty self wherein your mind frolics infinitely. Second technique is based on the dimension of play. That has to be understood. If you are inactive, it is good to fall into deep emptiness, into the inner abyss. But you cannot be empty the whole day. And you cannot be passive the whole day. You will have to do something. Activity is basically required, otherwise you cannot be alive. Life means activity. So you can be inactive for a few hours, but 24 hours you will have to be active. And meditation should be something which becomes your style of life. It should not be a fragment. Otherwise, you will gain it and lose it. And 1 hour you can be inactive, then 23 hours you will be active. Active forces will be more, and they will destroy whatsoever you attain in your inactivity. The active forces will destroy it. And again, the next day you will be the same. 23 hours you will accumulate the doer, and in 1 hour you will have to drop it. It will be difficult. So your mind must change the attitude about work also, activity also. Hence the second technique. Work should be considered as play, not as work. Work should be considered as play, just a game. You should not be serious about it. Just like children play meaninglessly. Nothing is to be achieved as if. Just the very activity is enjoyed. You can feel the distinction. If sometimes you play, When you work, it is different. You are serious. Burdened, responsible, worried, anxious, because the result, the end result, is the motive. The work itself is not worth enjoying. The real thing is just in the future, in the result. In play, there is no result really. The very process is blissful. And you are not worried. It is not a serious thing. And even if you look serious, it is just pretending. In a play, you enjoy the very process. In work, the very process is not being enjoyed, the goal, the end. The process has to be tolerated anyhow. It has to be done because the end is to be achieved. If you can achieve the end without this, you will drop activity and you will jump to the end. But in play, you will not do that. If you can achieve the end without playing, then the end will be futile. It has some meaning only through the process. For example, two football teams are on the ground. They can decide just by throwing a coin that who wins and who is defeated. Why go in such much effort unnecessarily, exerting yourself? The thing can be decided very easily just by dropping a coin. The end will be there. One team wins, another is defeated. Why work for it? But then there will be no meaning, no significance. End is not meaningful. The very process is the meaning. Even if no one wins and no one is defeated, the game was worth. The activity in itself is enjoyed. This dimension of play has to be applied to your whole life. Whatsoever you are doing, be there in that activity so totally that the end is irrelevant. It may come, it has to come, it will come. But it is not on your head, on your mind. You are playing. You are enjoying. That's what Krishna means when he says to Arjuna, leave the future in the hands of divine, the result of your activity in the hands of divine. You simply do. This simple doing, it becomes a play. That's what Arjuna finds difficult to understand. Because he says, if it is just play, then why kill? Why fight? He understands what work is. He cannot understand what play is. And Krishna, his whole life is a play. You cannot find such a non-serious man anywhere. His whole life is just a play, a game, a drama. He is enjoying everything, but he is not serious about it. he is enjoying it intensely, but not worried about the result. What happens, that is irrelevant. To understand Krishna, it is difficult for Arjuna because he calculates. He thinks in terms of the end result. He says in the beginning of Gita that this whole thing seems to be absurd. On both the sides, my friends, my relatives are standing to fight. Whosoever wins, it will be a loss. My family, my friends, my relatives will be destroyed. Even if I win, it will not be worth, because to whom I am going to show my victory? Victories are meaningful because friends will enjoy, relatives, families. There will be no one. The victory will be just over dead bodies. Who will appreciate it? Who will say, Arjuna, you have done a great deed? So whether I am victorious or I am defeated, it seems absurd. The whole thing is nonsense. He wants to renounce. He is dead serious. And anyone who calculates will be dead serious. The setting of Gita is unique. War is the most serious affair. You cannot be playful about it because lives are involved, millions of lives are involved. You cannot be playful. And Krishna insists that even there you have to be playful. You don't think about what will happen in the end. You just be here and now. You just be a warrior playing. You don't get worried about the result. The result is in the hands of the divine. That is not the point, whether the result is in the hands of the divine or not. The point is, it should not be in your hands. You should not carry it. If you carry, then your life cannot become meditative. This second technique says, gracious one, play. Let your whole life be just a play. The universe is an empty cell wherein your mind frolics infinitely. Your mind goes on playing infinitely. The whole thing is just like a dream into an empty room. Meditating, one has to look at the mind just frolicking, just like children playing, jumping out of overflowing energy, that's all. Thoughts jumping, frolicking, just a play. Don't be serious about it. Even if a bad thought is there, don't feel guilty. Or there is a very great thought, very good thought, that you want to serve humanity and transform the whole world, and you want to bring the heaven on earth. Don't get too much. Don't get too much ego through it. Don't feel that you have become great. This is just a frolicking mind. Sometimes it goes down, sometimes it comes up. Just overflowing energy, taking many shapes and forms. Mind is just an overflowing spring, nothing else. And be playful, Siva says. Gracious one, be playful. The attitude of the player means he is enjoying the activity. It is good in itself. No profit motive is involved. He is not calculative. Just look, a businessman. Whatsoever he is doing, he is calculating about the profit. What he is going to attain out of it. If customer comes, the customer is not a person. What can be profited out of him? He is just a means. How can he be exploited? Deep down he is calculating. What is to be said, what is to be done, is everything calculated. Just to manipulate, just to exploit. He is not concerned with this person. He is not concerned with the deal. He is not concerned with anything. He is concerned only for the future, the profit. Look in the east, still in the villages. Even a businessman is not just a profit maker. And the customer has not come just to purchase something. They enjoy it. I remember my old grandfather. He was a cloth merchant. And I was puzzled. My whole family was puzzled because he enjoyed it so much. Ours together, it was a game with the customers. Something worth 10 rupees and he will ask 50 rupees for it. And he knows this is absurd. And his customers knew. And they know that it must be near about 10 rupees, and they will start from 2 rupees, and long giggling will follow. Hours together, my father, my uncles will get angry that what is going on? You simply say, what is the price? But he had his own customers. When they will come, they will ask, where is Dada? Where is grandfather? Because with no one, with him it is a game, a play. Whether we lose 1 rupee or 2, more or less, that's not the point. But they enjoyed it. The very activity in itself was something worth pursuing. Two persons communicating through it. Two persons playing a game. And both know it is a game. A fixed price is possible. In the West now they have fixed prices because they are more calculating and more profit motivated. They cannot conceive why waste time. The thing can be settled within minutes. There is no need. You can just write the exact price. Why hours together fight for it? But then the game is lost. Then the whole thing becomes routine. Even machines can do it. The businessman is not needed. The customer is not needed. I have heard about one psychoanalyst. He was such a busy man and he had so many patients that it was difficult to have personal contact with everyone. So he will feed his tape recorder for a particular customer, a particular patient. And that tape recorder will say whatsoever the psychoanalyst wants to say to the patient. Once it happened, he had a very rich man who was his patient. And it was his appointed time. And this psychoanalyst was entering a hotel. Suddenly he saw the patient sitting there. So he asked, what are you doing here? It was your time with me. The patient said, I am such busy that I have fed my own tape recorder. Those both tape recorders are talking to each other. Whatsoever you have to say to me, my tape recorder will record it. And whatsoever I have to say to you, your tape recorder will record it from my tape recorder. This saves time, and we are both free. If you are too much calculating, then persons disappear. More and more mechanicalism comes in. Even now, in villages in India, higgling goes on. It is a game, and worth enjoying. You are playing. It is a match between two intelligences. And two persons come in deep contact. But it is not time-saving. Games can never be time-saving. And in games, you don't worry about the time. You are carefree. And whatsoever is going on, you enjoy it right in that moment. Being playful is one of the deepest bases of all meditative processes. But we are business-like. We are trained for it. So even when we meditate, we are looking for the end, for the result. And whatsoever happens, you will be unsatisfied. People come to me, they say, yes, meditation is growing, progressing. I'm feeling more happy, a little more silent, at ease, but nothing else is happening. What nothing else? I know this man is bound to come someday. He will say, yes, I'm feeling nirvana. But nothing else is happening. I am blissful, but nothing else is happening. What nothing else? He is looking after some profit. And unless some very visible profit comes into his hands, something which he can deposit in a bank, he cannot be satisfied. Silence, happiness are so vague. You cannot purchase them. You cannot show them to anyone. Every day it happens, people come to me and they say, yes. But they are sad. They are expecting something which should not be expected even in business. And they are expecting it even in their meditation. The business mind comes into meditation with the whole training of business. What profit can be made out of it? He is not playful. And if you are not playful, you cannot be meditative. Be more and more playful. Waste enough time in playing. Just playing with children will do. Even if there is no one, you can alone jump and dance in the room and be playful. Enjoy. But your mind will go on insisting, what you are doing, wasting time. You can earn something out of this time. You can do something. And you are just jumping, singing and dancing. What are you doing? Have you gone mad? Try it. much whatsoever time you can get out of your business and be playful. Whatsoever, you can paint, you can play on a sitar. Anything you like, but be playful, no profit out of it. No future in it, just the present. And then you can be playful inside also. Then you can jump on your thoughts, play with them, throw them here and there, dance with them, but don't be serious about them. There are two types of people. One, who are just unconscious as far as their mind is concerned. Whatsoever happens in their mind, they are unconscious. They are drifting in it without knowing where the mind leads to them. If you can be aware of any track, you will be just puzzled what is happening. Mind moves through associations. A dog barks on the street. The bark comes to your head, and now you have started. You may move to the very end of the world through this barking of the dog. You may remember some friend who had a dog. Then this dog is dropped. Then that friend has come into the mind. Then he had a wife. And the wife was beautiful, and now you are moving. And you can go to the very end of this world, and you will never remember that just a dog played a trick on you, just barked and put you on the track, and you started to move. And you will be simply feel awkward what scientists say about it. They say that this track is fixed in your mind. If the same dog in the same situation barks again, you will follow this track again. The friend, the dog, the wife beautiful, and you will go again. Now they have tried many experiments with electrodes on the human brain. They touch a particular spot in the brain. Then a particular memory is released. Suddenly you see you are 5 years old playing in a garden, running after a butterfly. And then the whole sequence, and you feel pleasant, everything nice, the air, the garden, the smell, everything comes alive. It is not simply memory, you relive it. Then the electrode is pulled out, the memory starts. Again the electrode touches the same spot, the same memory starts again. You are again a 5 years old, in the same garden, the same butterfly, the same smell, the same sequence of events. Electrode is pulled out, the memory disappears. Put the electrode in the same spot, the memory again. Just as if you are remembering something mechanically, and then always starts from the beginning and ends to a particular end. Again, it starts from the beginning. Just like as you record something on the tape recorder. And your brain has millions of memories, millions of cell recording. And this is whole mechanical. These experiments in human brain are very strange and very revealing. And this memory can be revived again and again, again and again. One experimenter tried for 300 times. And the memory will come the same. It is recorded. And again when he tried, the person on whom the experiment was done became aware, and he felt very, very weird. because he is not the master. He cannot do anything. When the electrode touches, the memory starts. He has to see it. 300 times by and by, he became a witness. He started seeing it. But then he was aware that he is different and this memory is different. This experiment can be helpful, very helpful for meditators. Because then you know your mind is nothing but a mechanical recording around you. You are separate. And this mind can be touched. Now scientists say that sooner or later we will cut all the centers which give you anguish, anxiety. Because again the same thing touches and the whole thing has to be lived. I have been trying with many disciples, many experiments. The same thing, do the same thing, and they move in the same vicious circle. Again and again, again and again. Unless they become a witness that this is a mechanical thing. You are aware, say to your wife the same thing. After every week, the same thing, and she will react. Again, after 7 days, when she has forgotten, say the same thing. She will react and then record. The reaction is going to be the same. You know, your wife knows. A pattern becomes fixed. And then it goes on. Even a dog can move your pattern just by barking. Something is hit, one electrode has entered. You have started on a journey. If you are playful in life, then you can be playful inside with the mind also. Then look as if you are watching something on a TV screen. You are not involved. You are just a spectator, onlooker. Look and enjoy it. Don't say good, don't say bad, don't condemn, don't appreciate, because those are serious things. A naked woman comes on the screen. Don't say this is bad. Some devil is playing trick upon me. No devil is there to play trick upon you. Look at it as if just on the screen, a filmy screen. And be playful about it. Say to the lady, wait. Don't try to push her out. Because the more you push out, the more she will come in. Ladies are difficult. And don't follow her. If you follow, then you will be in trouble. Don't follow, don't fight. This is the rule. Just look and be playful. Just say a good hello or good morning and just look and don't be disturbed at all. Let the lady wait. She will go by herself as she has come. She moves on her own. She is not related to you. Just something in the memory is struck by some situation, she has come there. Just a picture. Be playful with it. If you can be playful with your mind, the mind will drop very soon. Because mind can be there only if you are serious. Seriousness is the link, the bridge. Gracious One, play the universe. The universe is an empty cell wherein your mind frolics infinitely. Third technique, Sweet-Hearted One, meditate on knowing and not knowing, existing and not existing, then leave both aside that you may be. Meditate on knowing, then on not knowing, existing and not existing. Meditate on the positive aspect of life and then on the negative. Then put aside both, because you are neither. Then leave both aside that you may be. Look it in this way. Meditate that you are born. A child is born. You are born. You grow. You become young. Meditate on this whole growth. Then you become old. Then you die. From the very beginning when you are born, imagine the very moment when your father and mother conceived you, into the womb of the mother you came. Just the first cell from their look to the very last, when your body is burning on a funeral pyre and all your relatives are standing around you. And then put aside both, the one who was born and one who has gone dead. Just put aside both and then look within. There you are, who is never born and who is never going to die. Knowing, not knowing, existing, not existing, then leave both aside that you may be. You can do it on any positive, negative polarity, any. You are sitting here, I look at you, I know you. Then I close my eyes, you are no more there, I don't know you. Then the knowledge that I had known and this knowledge that I don't know, put aside both. You will be empty, because when you put knowledge and non-knowledge both aside, you will be empty. There are two types of people. Some are filled with knowledge and some are filled with ignorance. There are people who say, we know. They have their ego bound with their knowledge. And there are people who say, we are ignorant, but they are also egoistic. They are filled with their ignorance. They say, we are ignorant. We don't know. One is identified with knowledge, another is identified with ignorance. But both possess something. Both cherish something. Put both aside, knowing, not knowing. You are neither. Nor ignorant, nor knowing. Put aside both positive and negative. Then who you are, suddenly the who will be revealed to you. You will become aware of the beyond, that which transcends. Putting aside positive and negative both, you will be empty. You will be no one, neither wise nor ignorant. Put hate and love both aside. Put friendship, enmity both aside. When both the polarities are put aside, you are empty. And this is the trick of the mind. It can put one aside. Never the two both. It can put one aside. You can put ignorance aside, then you cling to knowledge. You can put pain aside, but then you cling to pleasures. You can put enemies aside, but then you cling to the friends. And there are few people who go just the reverse. They will put friends aside and cling to the enemies. They will put love aside and will cling to hate. They will put wealth aside and will cling to poverty. And they can put knowledge, scripture aside, and then they will cling to ignorance. These people are great renouncers. So whatsoever you cling, they put it aside. And they cling to the opposite, but they cling all the same. And clinging is the problem, because if you cling, you cannot be empty. Don't cling. This is the message of this technique. Just don't cling to any positive negative. Non-clinging, you will find yourself. You are there. Because of clingings, you are hidden. Non-clinging, you will be exposed. You will be uncovered. You will explode. Fourth technique, enter space, supportless, eternal, still. Enter space, supportless, eternal, still. Three qualities of space have been given in this technique, supportless. There can be no support in space. Eternal. It can never end. Still, it will be soundless. It will be silence. Enter this space. It is within you. But the mind always asks for support. People come to me, and if I say to them, just sit silently with closed eyes and don't do anything, they ask some alamban, some support. Give me some mantra as a support, because I cannot sit. Just sitting is difficult. Give them a mantra, then it is okay. They can go on repeating the mantra. Then it is easy. With support, you are never empty. That's why it is easy. Anything goes on, you are doing something. Doing, the doer remains. Doing, you are filled. You may be filled with Omkar, Om, Ram, Jesus, Ave Maria, or anything. You may be filled with anything. But you are filled, then you are okay. Mind resists emptiness. It wants always to be filled by something, because if it is filled, it can be. If it is not filled, it will disappear. In emptiness, you will attain to no mind. That's why support. Mind asks for support. And if you want to enter inner space, don't ask for support. Drop all supports. Mantra, gods, scriptures. And just move inside supportless. It will be fearful. You will feel scared. You are moving somewhere where you can be lost completely. You may not be able to come back, because all supports are lost. Your contact with the bank is lost. Where this river will lead you, no one knows. Your support is lost. You may fall into an infinite abyss. Hence fear grips you and you ask for some support. Even if it is a false support, you enjoy it. Even a false support is helpful, because for the mind it makes no difference whether the support is real or false. It must be a support, that's the point. You are not alone, something is there and supporting you. It happened once. A man came to me. He was living in a house where he felt there were spirits and ghosts, and he was much worried. Through worries, he started seeing more illusions. Through worries, he became ill, weak. His wife said, "If you live more in this house, I'm leaving." His children were sent to some relative's house. That man came to me and he said, "It has become too difficult now. I see them clearly. They walk. In the night, the whole house is filled with spirits. You help me." So I gave him one of my pictures and said, "Take it. And now I will tackle those spirits. You simply sleep silently. You need not worry." He said, "Really? Really, I will tackle. I will see to them. Now it is my business. And don't interfere. Now you need not be concerned." The man came next day and he said, "We slept. It was so beautiful. You have done a miracle. And I have not done anything. But I suppose, through support the mind was at ease. Through support the mind was filled. It was no more vacant. Someone was there. In ordinary life you are leaning on many false supports, but they help. And unless you become strong enough, you will need them. That's why I say this is the ultimate technique, where no support. Buddha was dying, and Ananda asked him, "Now you are leaving us. What shall we do? How shall we attain? How shall we proceed now? When the master is gone, we will be wandering in darkness for many, many lives. No one is there to lead us, to guide us. The light is going out." So Buddha says, "It will be good for you. When I am no more, you become your own light. Move alone. Don't ask for any support, because support is the last barrier." And it happened so. Ananda could not become enlightened. For 40 years he was with Buddha, the closest disciple. Just like a shadow to Buddha, moving with him, living with him. Longest contact of 40 years, and Buddha's compassion falling over him, raining over him for 40 years, nothing happened. Ananda remained as ignorant as ever. And the next day when Buddha died, Ananda became enlightened. The next day. The very next day, the very support was the barrier. When there was no Buddha, Ananda could not find any support. And it is difficult. If you live with a Buddha, then if Buddha is gone, then no one can be a support to you. Now, no one will be worth clinging. One who has been clinging to a Buddha cannot cling to anybody in this world. This whole world is vacant. Once you have known a Buddha and his love and compassion, then no love, no compassion can be compared. Once you have tasted that, then in this world nothing is worth this. So Ananda was alone for the first time after these 40 years, totally alone. And there was no be supportless. Don't cling to a master. Don't cling to a scripture. Don't cling to anything. And that's what every master has been doing. His whole effort is first to attract you towards him, so you start clinging to him. When you start clinging to him, and when you have come so close and intimate to him, then he knows. Now the clinging must be cut. And you cannot cling to anyone else now. That's finished. You cannot move to anyone. That's impossible. Then he cuts the clinging. Suddenly you are left supportless. It will be miserable in the beginning. You will cry and you will weep and you will scream, and the whole being will feel you are lost. In the very deepest depth of misery you will fall. But from there one arises alone, supportless. Enter a space, supportless, eternal, still. That space has no beginning, no end, and that space is absolutely soundless. There is nothing, not even a sound vibrates it, not even a ripple. Everything is still, and that point is just within you. Any moment you can enter it. If you have courage to be supportless, this very moment you can enter it. The door is open. The invitation is all, for everyone and all. But courage is needed. Courage to be alone. Courage to be empty. Courage to dissolve and melt. Courage to die. And if you can die within your inner space, you will attain to the life which never dies. You will attain to Amrit, to immortality. Enough.